Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today the interview is with Mr. John Marston. Mr. Marston's son was murdered on December 29, 2017. His name was Mr. Fabian Smith. How are you doing this afternoon, Mr. Marston?
I'm good, Ms. Angela. I'm good.
Sorry to hear about your tragic loss.
Thank you.
So, in March, you opened a Facebook page called Houston Unsolved Homicide?
Yes, I did. And the reason why is because when I lost my son December 29th of 2017, pretty much I waited almost a month before the detectives called me in to speak about my son's murder. So within that time, I just decided to open this page because it was bigger than my son. You know, so within that time, that month period, we called the precinct every day. We texted our cell phones every day. I went to the precinct about 2 or 3 times a week. We even called the officer's cell phone. No one replied to us until they felt like replying to us. They said they were just busy. But my situation was, you're that busy, you cannot get the parents a phone call. You know, so to me, it didn't make any sense. How can you let someone's child get murdered and almost 3.5 weeks went by before you called them in and asked questions? You know, why your son was murdered? Do you have any friends? Do you have any enemies? you know, they didn't even think about that. So within that time, I went to the streets and I found answers to myself, who was involved in my son's case, who was with him the last second he took his breath, you know, who he was walking with, who's on the phone with. You know, so the police were surprised that I brought them everything they need to make an arrest, everything. And watching the news from December 29th all the way through March, all the killings and all the violence and robberies and everything else, I said, let me open the company up so I can help people in the community. One day they'll hopefully, you know, get justice, give them a little bit of hope that they'll get justice one day through the senseless act of violence to their loved ones.
Yes, sir. So I believe you have the Houston unsolved homicides, in my understanding, when I talked to you and what you sent me and the statistics, there are a lot of homicides in Houston, Texas.
Yes, there's a killing like every day. Like every day someone's getting shot and killed, and it's getting worse. If the city grows, so does the crime. But at the same time, you can't fault the police for that. You know, they could do so much to help you in your case. That's why the family and friends, the community, have to come together and give answers. If they don't give answers, the case will go cold.
All right, sir. On October 16, you went to City Hall and spoke with Mayor Turner and the city council members. You asked for one day called a candlelight vigil for homicide victims.
Yes. The reason why I did that is because on my Facebook page, a lot of people in the community, even out of state, reach out to me to help them with their murder cases. People want answers. So I said they have all these days for other issues. You know, I go to City Hall, people talking about the city left a pothole 4 feet from their doorstep. I'm like, wow, really? Cover it with sand. So I said, let me think of something that I could do that could benefit the city and probably go national. So I went to City Hall October 16th, and I spoke with the mayor and city council. They gave me 3 minutes to speak, but I didn't get 3 minutes. I got about 35 minutes, 40 minutes to speak. Because the city council members had a lot of questions, and they even opened up about their loved ones that were murdered in the streets of Houston and surrounding areas and their close friends. After we left, after the session went, it went pretty well. So the mayor said that they're going to investigate and look to see if this day exists. If the day do not exist, our mayor, Sylvester Turner, said that he will grant me this day. When Audrey, my wife, and I was leaving from out the City Hall council room, some of the members of City Hall, some of the council members came to us and told us we're doing the right thing, and they appreciate the work that we're doing in the community, because it's about time someone steps up to the plate and try to get justice for families. Because when people get murdered, especially it's the African community, African descent community, and Latin descent community, it tends to push it under the rug. The fact being, if you're walking in groups in a poor neighborhood, low-income neighborhood, they're considered to be gang-related or drug-related, and that's automatic. And that's sad how they divide us like that. A murder is a murder, regardless if you're black, white, purple, green. It shouldn't matter what neighborhood you're at. You know, so end of the day, I asked for that day, a candlelight vigil for homicide victims, so that the whole city could come together once every year at City Hall, which is a mutual ground. We all come out and pray, light our candles, and talk about our loved ones. I'm waiting for the mayor to call me back. And I'm going back again probably next week just because I need to know what his answer is.
I think it's wonderful what you are doing. In your own pain and grief, you've reached out to other people. And you're helping give them some hope. And you're reaching out not just in Houston, Texas, but to people in other states. So your pain, you are helping people.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's wonderful.
I don't mind doing it.
Not hatred.
God's calling.
Not out of hatred, but actually to help other people. And I have to believe that helps you too.
Yes. You know, my phone rings all day and all night. People reach out to me late at night, early in the morning, to help them with. They send me, they pick the loved ones' photos. They call me, I call them back. You know, just to, they're just thankful that someone is out there trying. They know it's going to be a long shot, you know, and I do everything through social media. But now I am, what I'm doing, I'm getting my website up. Already, it's going to be houhomicides.com. And in the next week or two, it'll be up. It's going to have pictures of murder victims. It's going to be a lot of things on there. It's going to be a good website. Because the reason I'm doing that, I should have been done it a long time ago. But now I think it's the time, because I have a lot of people reach out to me for help. And I think once this website goes up, it's also going to be a big part of helping families get justice, try to get a sense of closure.
Yes, sir. I understand what you are doing. So you have not found out who murdered your son, Mr. Fabian Smith. You haven't received
justice. We have some. I give the police everything they need, and they could have made an arrest by now. That's what I strongly believe. You know, so many things that don't add up. So many people were saying, like whispering in the background, saying, tell us one this, you know, so much lies, you know. And I think if they really wanted to make an arrest, they could have made an arrest by now, because like I said, they had nothing. They didn't even know where to start until I finally got a chance to speak with them. And I really believe if they really wanted to solve this case, they could have got in touch with us right away. Because like I said, I had from December 31st, New Year's Eve, I had information for them. And like I said, it took them almost a month, 3 weeks pretty much, before we even got to speak to them. So in that 3 weeks, the case already started going cold. And so you know, people don't understand this. If Bill and Bob saw Michelle Kilcero, that's what the department want. They want to just go and say, okay, it's an easy arrest. When it comes to going out there and doing the detective work, it's hard because they have more than one cases. They can't focus on just one case alone. So sometimes these officers, they do get frustrated because they don't have enough people in the community to come together. They don't come out and talk about it unless something happens to their family members. Then they want to speak about it. Yeah.
Yes, sir. So Houston, Texas is, Chicago, Illinois, in Florida, where I live, Parkville in Florida, there have been murders. There have been a lot of murders, massacres, as a matter of fact, but they don't call when you kill one person a massacre. So,
yes,
I'm
ma'am.
Sorry about your loss. Fantastic what you are doing, and I hope you get that day for the Houston, not just for you, but for the other people there in Houston and other
yes,
people
I will.
Work nationwide.
Do you know that a young lady was murdered? She was pushed off the freeway on September 4th, you know, and people didn't talk. People talk, but when me and my colleagues went out there and had the family, was interviewed by Channel 26, the people of the community were talking to us about what happened. And that's what it comes to now. It's like people don't really confide in the police anymore because they figure that's going to make it be a hush-hush. They don't worry about the situation that happened in the streets anymore. You name New York, you name L.A., you name Chicago, you name Houston, you name New Orleans, other places, Philly. The crime rate is getting out of hand, and that's the problem. The rate is getting out of hand. And what it is just retaliation back and forth now. That's what it is. If we're riding the car, five of us riding the car right now, and somebody, one of our friends, decide to shoot somebody and kill that person, we're all accomplishing that murder. But what happened, what these kids are doing now, they're not going to say anything until they get in trouble. They have a little bit of collateral over their head, pretty much, I'll say. So in case I get in trouble, I say, you know, officer, I know who did the shooting over here on 610 and Kirby on this date and this time. I know where he or she put the gun. I know everything. I know where they dumped their clothes at. You know, so these kids are smart now. And the sad thing about Houston, the lights, at the camp, at the red light intersection, because years ago the city didn't pay the contract company for the service, so they took, they don't work. So these kids, they know that the lights don't work, the traffic lights don't work, the camera light, the red cam camera light. So what happened when they doing that? They're not afraid of shooting you at a red light. They don't care at all. They don't care. And we, it's just something that bothers me, because I don't feel it's not right for you to come out your house every day and you have to worry about, are they going to take, someone's going to take your car, someone's going to hurt my daughter or my son or my wife. You know, that's why I'm trying to make a difference. I'm not even only tackling homicide cases. I'm tackling human trafficking. I'm tackling domestic violence. I'm tackling education. I'm even trying to help feed the homeless downtown. You know, so it's different things. I'm branching out. That's why I built a team called the Unstoppables. And we are fighting for every single right in Houston possible is.
Okay, so the area, so you have to live in a certain area for the police to really do anything. It has to be a certain race.
You know, you say that.
That's what you're saying?
And pretty much, it's a big difference when you live in Acreson 44. That's where Slim Thug is from, pretty much. You live in Dead End MLK. You live in Yellowstone. You live in Third Ward. It's a big difference comparing to Bel Air, comparing to the Woodlands, comparing to Fulshire, comparing to River Oaks. Because if something happened over there, the police investigate. They'll work harder in those areas than the low-income community. It's like, it seems like they forgot about us. It's like that. It seems like they don't really care about if a Latino or African descent person kill each other. You know, it's like a sweep under the rug. It seems like it to me. But if somebody of a different color get murdered in Bel Air or in the Woodlands, you know, it's no problem. They'll be on the TV. They'll be on the news. That's why sometimes they get to me, because they put people on news saying that the cat went up the tree. You know. And we get the firefighters to bring them down. And stuff like what I'm doing, the real story, you know, it's like they want to come, they want to hear that. I've been to Channel 2. I wrote them, Channel 39. I wrote them. And it's like, no person interested in this, Channel 26. You know, Channel 11, nobody care. And that's not right, you know. That's not right. They only focus on it. And that's in Houston, Atlanta, New York, Chicago, L.A., everywhere, Virginia, Florida. And it's not right. And people say, thank you, John, for what you're doing. Because finally we have someone coming out, helping us. It might take a while for someone to get to turn someone in. But at least you're not, we understand. We share the same compassion because we lost a loved one. You know, so at the end of the day, it's just not right that nobody, it seems like nobody cares anymore about our loved ones, especially when it comes to low-income neighborhoods.
Well, I care, and that's why you're on Show Talk with Angela.
Yes, ma'am.
I care.
Thank you, Ms. Butler.
I care.
Thank you, Mr. Ricky Jason.
Yes, sir. Mr. Ricky Jason, yes, he told me to get in contact with you. He gave me your information. I really, you're right, murder is murder.
Yes, ma'am.
And it shouldn't matter if you're black or Latino or white. When someone is murdered, it's still a murder. No matter their skin color, their sex, their race, their ethnicity. But unfortunately, what kind of person was Mr. Fabian Smith, your son? What kind
Fabian
of man
was
he?
He was tall, handsome, and goofy. Loved to dance. He had the weirdest dance. The dances that came out now, he was doing that when he was like 6 years old. Everybody has to pick on Fabian, like, you can't dance, you can't dance. And he ended up winning a dance contest. His brother and sister, he's always picking it. It was always fun, have fun a lot. You know, he was funny. His mother used to always text him scriptures. And his three friends said that he was always talking about God to them. He lost his way a minute. He liked to smoke marijuana. Everybody does seem like it, but that's not important, you know. And he was a good kid. He stopped hanging out. He started going to school. He said, Pops, I like school. I'm struggling a little bit, but it's okay because everybody, he said, I know old people go to school. I said, yeah, they go to school older than me too. And he laughed about that. He said, I like it because now I'm spending more time with my daughter. I'm trying to get my own apartment, you know, and that's a good thing about him. And he thanked me because, see, people don't understand this. I'm not Fabian's biological father, but I raised him when he was 2 years old. People say, why are you doing this? That's my son. I had him when he was 2 years old. He's always lived with me, always had, you know, and my door is always open to him and his other two brothers, Fabian and Sharif, and his older brothers. That's what it is. So that's why people understand, why are you doing this? His own father. I don't care about his own father. You know, we were born, and me and his father, Patrick, were born the same day, March 17, 1975. We were born 43 years old, you know. And the day I took the responsibility on from the first day I met him because I loved and I cared about him, you know. And that's what it is. It's like no one's going to tell me different because that's my son. You know, he was on my dental, my vision, my life insurance. When he sprained his foot, I took him to the doctor. When he was sick, I was up late at night with him, rubbing him down, taking care of him. Oh, yes, I was strict with him. I was strict for a reason. You know, but in the day, he never disrespected me. And he never told me, like, you're not my father. He always said yes, even if he got a whooping. Yes, Dad, I'm sorry, Dad. He was a good kid. He was a good, funny, tall, goofy kid. Funny, handsome. The ladies loved him. And he loved the ladies, too. It's my son. Yeah, so Fabian was very, very goofy. He was a good kid, you know, and he has a daughter, Alexia. She's 6 years old, and he loved her dearly. He really loved his daughter. He loved family. You know, Fabian was one of those kids that would give you anything in the world, you know, who would help you. If he met you 2 seconds ago, you need a ride across town, he would give you a ride across town. And that's why I'm fighting so hard for justice. That's why I'm fighting so hard for justice, because Fabian was a good kid. He didn't care if you're black, white, Hispanic. He didn't care what religion you was. He didn't care what color you was, what shape, what size. He loved and cared about you. You know, he wanted to make it so bad. He wanted to be one day have his own company. That's why he started going back to school. He wanted to show the world that he could make a difference in this world. You know, but I do miss him. We all miss him. As the 29th come, it's very emotional for everyone.
Sir.
You know, and
yes, sir.
It hit me before, but a couple of days ago I went to,
I was going to ask, how many people are in Houston Unsolved Homicide? Are there a lot of people that's a part of this? You say you get phone calls all the time, day and night.
Yes, I have a lot of people, yes. I have people all over I haven't even added a lot of photos to the website as yet. I mean, to the Facebook pages yet. But right now, I think I have probably about 40 people on there. I have even people that's missing. They love us from out of state. Ask me, can I come investigate? People call me from all over, want me to come and speak at events, but I can't afford to speak at events. Yeah, I cannot afford to come speak at events because I don't have that money to travel. I don't have that income. I don't have that, you know. And so people get mad sometimes, but I could do so much. Because in the day, I don't have it. I don't have it like that. I'm doing this out my pocket. I'm doing this by myself, you know. And it helps me a lot. It helps me a lot to cope with my loss. It helps me a lot to cope, you know, what I'm going through. It helps me to help people. It helps me to help people.
Yes, sir. And Mr. Ricky Jason is great. It's unfortunate and sad to know that there are so many murders in Houston, Texas. As a matter of fact, I have family in Texas. A murder every day in all those oil wells in Texas. And I understand that Black Lives Matter. I understand what that means. Because people, it's going unnoticed, the death, the murders, the homicide of black people. So
yes,
that's
ma'am.
How Black Lives Matter started, like you, sir. I understand, though, murder is murder, though. Understand
yes, ma'am.
How you feel about that. But like I was saying, that is how Black Lives Matter started, because no one cared that black people were being gunned down in public by police officers and anyone else. So the best thing I believe people can do is pray.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. I'm glad you're actively making a difference, though. That's wonderful to know that there's somebody out there who's trying to make a difference, who's not holding it all in, who's not lashing out in hatred. America needs more people like you to start groups like on Facebook, and I pray that the mayor grants you that day, because most people react out of hate sometimes. You know, they react out of hate, but you're not, and it sounds like you're a lot like your son, a loving person.
Yes, ma'am. I think you'd have done the same thing. You'd done the same thing for me.
Okay. So, how are you contacting the police or the detectives? How do you go about getting them to work on your case? That's what I'd like to know. What have you learned that will help other people? How do you get them to start investigating and working on a case instead of waiting 3 weeks?
Well, what I did, like I said, I got tired of calling. I went down there over and over again. And even when they were working on my case, I had to go to City Hall in front of the mayor. I made a big banner. It said Fabian Smith on the banner. And I went to City Hall. And I told the mayor, I don't know what's going on, but my son was murdered. My son was murdered. And I've been calling detectives. They don't answer the phone. They're replying any phone calls. Even when I was going to the mayor's office, the HPD called me that Friday and asked me, is there anything you can do? You know, you don't have to go to the mayor's office. I'm like, no, I'm going. Then they called me back that Monday. I forgot to correct this the date, but they called me that Monday also. And I said, I'm going. You know, so I appreciate the phone call, but I'm going. And after that, everything turned. You know, like, I guess the mayor reached out to the chief of police. I'm not sure where we spoke to, but this was broadcast throughout Houston on the local, City Hall channel they have. And pretty much everything started taking a turn. But even then, you know, the detectives, like I said, I feel for them too. I have understanding. But the other thing people want from the police is communication. Problem we have. Lie to the family. Tell them we're still trying to get suspects. We think we have somebody of interest. But people always call me and tell me, sir, I've been calling them for months. They haven't returned my phone call. My thing is, you're not busy. You're not that busy, you can't return the phone call. But in my situation, like I said, I went out and I got answers to who was with my son, who was walking with him, who called him back. Who's him when he got shot? Why did he get shot? And why y'all moved his body and took everything off him? His money, his jewelry, his phone. Why did y'all do that? Why it took you guys so long from, say, he got shot at 8:25? Why did he take you guys up to pretty much 8:40 to walk across the street, not even 900 feet, to call the police while you surrounded by 3 gas stations? That's suspicious to me. Coming, y'all took off running. If this was your so-called best friend, your brother, you would never left him behind to die like that. From the moment that the paramedics said, if they would have called, Fabian fought for his life. Fabian fought for his life. He kept on going and coming back. We've never seen someone fought that hard for his life. If they would have called at 8:25, 8:26, 8:30 when he got shot. Remember, the paramedics, the ambulance, the fire station was only a mile and a quarter away. It took them not even 2 minutes to get there. It took them 11 minutes to get to the hospital. So from, say, 8:25 until pretty much 8:45, he bled out. He lost a lot of blood. So they wanted him dead for a reason. They wanted him dead because they knew that he was going to identify the person who shot him. Even in the hospital, someone called and said, is this Fabian's mom? Well, after we got the news saying that Fabian was, I said, we stayed in the hospital too long. Something's wrong. It says, you know what, ma'am, sir, I hate to tell you this, but Your son lost his life on the way to the hospital. We sitting there, we was crying. The phone rang. Is it Fabian, Mom? Yes, it is. Is Fabian dead? Are you sure? Are you sure? Are you positive? Are you sure he's dead? Who is this? This is, okay, all right. Are you sure he's dead? Click, hung up the phone. That night, that drew a red flag. The next day, I got up. I went to Harm Clark, corner Buffalo Speedway and West Orme. I took my camera, went on Facebook Live. I walked to 3 gas stations. And I said, there's no way someone murdered my son. It was a setup, and they robbed him, and they took his life. Even the clerk said, we know your son. He was very funny. He was nice. They said, did they take his car? He gave a nice car with rims on it, TVs in it. Did they take his car? They said, sir, your son never walked. He never walked. He has to drive his car to the store. He never walked. So when that happened, that brought suspicion. So everybody saying the same thing. Your son never, we knew your son never walked. The whole community said, why was your son walking? We never seen him walking. He has to drive his car. And that's what I came to figure out. It was foul play. One of the young men told me, I recorded him. He said, yes, sir. When he was bleeding, I had blood. I was holding his chest. He had blood. I was holding him in my arms. He had blood everywhere. I had blood on my hands, on my face, on my clothes. I said, well, thank you, sir, before I find out the truth. Thank you, sir. You did so much for my son. I appreciate it. What's my son's last words? I don't know. He was bleeding everywhere. A few weeks later, and I was talking to the clerk. I said, sir, can I park here? My son was murdered. Said, that's your son. Was, oh, man, I'm so sorry. So this young man walked in the Yeah, he said, I'm so sorry about your son. I knew he was a nice guy. He said, I'm so sorry. It's just foul play. So I walked in and started talking to the man. Ma'am?
They should have been investigating this.
I'm going to tell you about that. But see what happened, when I was in the store, this young man came and said, hey, I'm sorry about your son's death. He was, I'm his friend. I'm sorry about that. He disappeared. So the clerk had his back turned. And he turned and said, sir, there's two entrances to the store, the front entrance and the side entrance. He said, sir, that's the young man right there ran the store. I said, did he have blood? He said he had no blood on his hand or his body, anything. There's no blood on the door, nothing. When he left, thing to the police, all the recordings. I gave him every single thing. Even one young man said, I asked the question. He said, I recorded him. He said, I said, I'm sorry. I said, sir, so tell me. I heard the bullet went straight through. Was he shot with a shotgun from close range? He said, no. Well, I saw the bullet. He changed the subject. My question is, if the police searched for a bullet for 2 days, how you saw the bullet? If they didn't see a bullet, how do you – 2-3 things. One, it could be a revolver. The second, you load up the handgun. The third, you move this body and you found the bullet, then decide to run and call for help. Three factors. That's the whole thing. Three factors right there.
So you believe it's – so you've been doing your own investigating. You having to do that yourself.
Yeah, I'll give everything. The police had nothing. They had nothing. They didn't know who was walking with him. They had nothing. But they had nothing.
Okay. So in all your grief and pain, you've had to investigate also to try to get justice for your son.
Yes, ma'am. I'm still doing it to this day.
Just to bring the murderers with an S to justice.
Well, it's funny you say that because my son left and they called him back. My son's last phone call was at 5:16. They called him back at 8:13. They spoke for like 4 minutes on the phone. It was 4 young men. One stayed behind in the car 3 blocks away because he knew what was going to happen to my son. He stayed behind because he figured that if he walked with them and they shot him, he'd be going down for murder. You see, it was original four from Call My Son Back. They called him back.
So these were friends that did this?
These are friends that he helped with money, paid their cell phone bills sometimes. If they need a hotel to stay in, one of them he gave a lot of clothes, 2 big bags of clothes. You see,
so then you believe it was his friends that murdered him. This was not just a robbery.
Now, this, just, they, this he left, and they called him back.
They robbed. He left and they called him back. Okay.
Mm-hmm. He left and they called him back. That's something I don't understand. It's like, why would you take your friend's life? Word is that he was wrestling one of them and one of them shot him.
That's who shot him.
Yes, man. One of them shot him. He was wrestling one of the. Mm-hmm.
You know who shot him?
The word is, yeah, we know who shot him. And now the police is on my same page, finally. They're on my same page, pretty much. They understand what I'm doing, what I'm saying, and everything that I'm saying right now, pretty much they understand what I'm doing. And detectives, they actually work on the case. You know, damn. But now that these four young men, they grew up in that neighborhood. My son didn't grow up. They don't even hang in the area anymore. They don't even hang in the area. You can't even find them anywhere. They keep on changing their Instagram names. Like every 2 or 3 weeks, they get a new name. They shut their account down, open it back up again. That's what they're doing. So why are you hiding like that? You don't even come out anymore. You used to come in the area every single day. So why are four of you guys all of a sudden just disappear, move across town, move out of the whole area completely? And I think if the police would have grabbed them when this happened.
Do you believe they might have been scared the reason they moved? Or are you certain of what you're saying? Scared that somebody would get them?
Well, knowing to them, they ain't scared of nobody. That's their neighborhood. But at the same time, people saying that they set them up. So they might be afraid, too, of their lives because people say they set them up. And my son was loved by many people. But like I tell people, I want no violence. I want peace. If I speak somewhere, I speak about peace. Even we had a little gathering out there, I spoke about peace. You know, I said, justice will come one day. And then I told him, I said, if this was your friend, why didn't y'all come to the wake? Why didn't y'all come to the funeral?
But he was giving them things that they wanted. He was paying for hotels for them, giving them clothes, loaning them, giving them money. You know, I found out you don't loan people money anymore. You give them money because they never pay you back.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So it's just so much violence and so much, you know, and that's what I tell families. You know, you have to get answers. You have to get answers. You know, you have to get it yourself. You have to find answers because people say you have closure. To me, you get a sense of understanding. You might have the closure of the person getting arrested for the crime they did. But the closure of losing a loved one, that pain will always be there. So it's hard to get closure. You know, it's something that's really hard. To me, you get a sense of understanding of what really happened.
Yes, sir. So do you believe that the police are going to be able to solve this case and bring some form of justice? I hope you do get some type of closure.
I think
it will make you feel better to know that the person or the people who murdered your son are brought to justice and they didn't get away with it.
I think we will. Because the amount of evidence and stuff that the police have, and they've been gathering more evidence on their own. So, because I did my part, and I think that in the day we'll get justice. It might not be today, but I think it'll come later on down the line. Because these kids, they talk a lot. And like I say, they hold information until they get in trouble. So whenever they get in some serious trouble, that's when the information will come out.
Okay. So are there a lot of killings in your neighborhood, or is it all over Houston, Texas?
Oh, that's all over Houston, all over north, south, east, and west, and it's only mostly in the low-income neighborhoods. That's why Romeo Malam, he was 4 years old, he was shot in May. Two young ladies, African-American, they were arguing and fighting. One young lady started running, shooting with a gun aimed behind her shooting. The bullet went and hit Romeo Malam in the stomach. Miss Lorraine said, "Get down on the ground, gunshots." She looked up, Romeo had his hand in his stomach. He looked at her and smiled and collapsed. Romeo Malam had been over 30 surgeries he have. So what I did, I've been, Miss Lorraine's like a big sister to me now. We talk all the time on the phone. We text, we talk. They had a fundraiser. I went and bought groceries. I ended up cooking food. Every dime we made, we gave to him. Mr. Derek Muhammad came out. Mr. Reginald Gordon, known as OG1, came out. Everyone came out, just in Muhammad. And that was, we all prayed and support her. But what I went a step farther. I made a Facebook video saying that the apartment complex, not the managers, but the owners of the low-income community, the people that owns the apartment complex that's getting payment from the government for housing Section 8, should be responsible for when someone gets injured or murdered on their property. People say you have tenants' rights, but if you break a lease because you don't feel safe, it goes on your credit report. You see? So I feel the same way it should go on credit report. It'd be the same way that these apartment owners should be responsible for the damages when it comes to apartments, tenant safety, because these guys own several apartments.
They should have security, yeah, like they do, yes, in other neighborhoods. They should have security,
yes,
guards.
Yes. Because I'll tell you something, you can't just go downtown to Midtown apartment complex and just walking up, driving an apartment complex. You got to get in. You have to show ID, and they're strict in there. But see, in our community, in the low-income community, it doesn't matter, because the fact being, these guys are millionaires, and they get this guaranteed money every month from the government that the taxpayers give the government to help people in need, you know. And in the day, they don't care. They sit back and relax. There got to be some type of bill. We have to have a bill that states that they must have, if you have 20 apartment buildings on the property, and there, you know, there should be so much off-duty officers working the property, or trained armed security officers with guns to protect the people from harm.
That's
protect
right.
Protect the property.
That's what I've always felt. That's what I've, yes. That
now,
should be a bill. That should be a,
yes,
law. That should,
it should be
a law. If you own apartment buildings, are you renting out a lot of houses, and things, especially apartment buildings and houses and all, and collecting government money, like HUD,
yes,
and
ma'am,
Section 8, there should be security in that area. The more houses you own, the more apartments they own, the more security. They should have security in those neighborhoods, because they've written the houses out, and they don't. All they care about is getting the money. That's all they care about, is getting the rent money.
Yes,
there
that's
are
all
really
it is.
People dying.
You know, your toilet overflow, the lights go out, people getting robbed and murdered. You know, you have no, the fence is torn down, the security that's on the property. Matter of fact, I'll give you a good example. Heverstock Apartments. Everyone know about Heverstock Apartments on northeast side of Houston, off 59. Everybody know about Jailhouse Apartments off Cullen and Reed Road, I mean Belford. Those apartments there, those are very dangerous apartments. You know, you have the police on property at Heverstock, and people are still killing, still fighting. They don't care. They don't care. Fights in the back break out, distract the police,
it
and someone gets killed
like
in the
madness.
Front.
Madness.
Yeah, it is. But there's not enough police officers to serve and protect the people every single day. There is not.
They're fighting. Not the residents,
yes,
but the police are?
No, the residents. The residents,
oh,
are fighting.
Oh, okay.
You know,
oh, okay,
there's not enough officers. You know, so I can't put all the blame on the police. I put the blame on us, also in the community, because people understand. What I see is parents not being parents anymore. I see mothers dressing like daughters. I see fathers telling their kids how to steal a car, how to roll up a blunt, instead of being a parent. See, I tell people every time, you can live in the environment, but you have to be a statistic in the environment. You could grow from that. There's so many successful people that grows up in a low-income neighborhood that come out